Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hi, this is Adam Wegman from Headspace and Ozzy Osbourne's band, currently on tour with the Mighty Sabs. You're listening to Talking Metal.
Welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast, home of all things hard rock and heavy metal. I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. Now, let's get things started with the Talking Metal theme song, written by Rob Halford, Metal Mike, and Roy Z.
Hey, this is Mark Striegel. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast. This is a cool episode. We have Adam Wegman, who is has played with everyone from Annie Lennox to Ozzy Osbourne to, of course, Black Sabbath. I'm joined by my co-host on this episode, my co-host in life, actually, Emily Striegel. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good.
And we just had the amazing opportunity to go see Adam Wegman play with Black Sabbath, although you don't really see him because he stands off stage, right?
Well, where we were sitting, we could actually see him, which was really cool. But I would not have, if I hadn't known he was there, I wouldn't have been looking for him if I would not have seen him.
Yeah, so if you go see Sabbath on this last run of tours and you're able to kind of look over to, as Emily said, the Geezer Butler side of the stage, you can see Adam standing off to the side of the stage. And he does keys. He does a lot of guitar, which I never realized, but he's going to tell us about that, all that, in this interview that we're about to do. I met up with him in Manhattan the same day that Emily and I went down to see him play with Black Sabbath in New Jersey at Homedale, New Jersey, which is kind of by the Jersey Shore. It's probably 90 minutes outside of Manhattan, maybe less if there were no traffic, maybe more if there were traffic, but it was just a great night, and Ozzy in such good voice. Really, I won't say the top of it, his game, but close to it, at least for the last decade or two.
Yeah, and I saw him at Madison Square Garden this past time and said the exact same thing. He sounds better than ever. He looks healthy. He looks happy. And it's just chills the entire time. It was such a good show.
Yeah, amazing show. And, you know, at first I'd looked at the set list online. I was like, oh, well, they're really focusing on those first four records. You know, they do Dirty Women, which is a little bit later. But for the most part, it's songs off those first four records. I was like, oh, why aren't they playing something off of 13? Why aren't they doing, you know, Never Say Die or something? But honestly, being that this is it, this is the last string of concerts for them, I almost feel like it's fitting that they're just sticking with those early records, those early songs, and kind of finishing where they started. And I wish we could go to the show in Birmingham on February 4th, the final show. Can we go?
You've already talked about, hey, I'm up for it. I'm always up. You know me. I'll go anywhere for any show to see a band I love, and Black Sabbath would be up there.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to go. But who knows? You never know. Maybe. But anyways, it was an honor talking with Adam, because Adam's not only been involved with touring with Sabbath, he, of course, tours with Ozzy. And when he's on stage with Ozzy. And he was heavily, heavily involved in Ozzy's last record, which is a while back at this point, but the Scream record, which I'm a big fan of. A lot of people maybe don't talk about that record as much as some of the earlier Ozzy solo records, but it's a great record. And Adam does a lot of the songwriting on the record with Ozzy. So with that said, let's get into a song by Ozzy Osbourne off the Scream record, a little sound sample. If you want to get the whole song, you can go listen to it on Spotify or go buy it on iTunes. This is called Digging Me Down, a song that Adam has a co-write on, and it's off the Scream record, which came out, I think, in 2010 by Ozzy Osbourne. Here we go, and then you'll hear my interview with Adam Wakeman.
We'll be right back.
This is Mark Striegel of the Talking Metal Podcast, and we are here in Midtown Manhattan with Adam Wakeman. Adam, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Mark.
Thanks so much for joining us. What an exciting time. We're heading down to PNC Arts Center tonight to see probably Black Sabbath for the last time for me. I know you guys will be touring until February, but I mean, what an amazing history. I was looking back at everything. I mean, going way back to the Sabbath Bloody Sabbath record, which most likely when your dad recorded on that record, Rick Wakeman, your dad, you were in the womb. Because, you know, that was recorded, I think, in late 1973, and you were born in 74. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I was somewhere in my the back of my dad's head, I think, probably at that time. Yeah, it's quite a mad thing to think that he played on that stuff right back in the day, you know. And I'm lucky enough to be here now, sort of, you know, sort of carrying it on.
Yeah, it really is quite amazing. And let's talk about Ozzy. You've been heavily involved with him in Sabbath, and also even more so on the solo stuff. Where did you first come to meet Ozzy Osbourne?
Well, it all came about. I was touring with Annie Lennox in America in 2003, and we played at a theater in Los Angeles. And in the front row, it was a very Los Angeles type audience. It was lots of celebrities, and you know, Rod Stewart was there with one of his Amazonianly tall wives of the time. I don't know which one. And then as I was looking down, I saw Sharon Osbourne. And I said to our tour manager at the time, a guy called Tony Wiggins, I said, during the interval, I said, oh, I saw Sharon Osbourne. I'd love to meet her. And he said, I used to work for Sharon. She's going to come back afterwards and say hi anyway. So I got chatting to Sharon. We talked for about half an hour or so. A lot about the TV show The Osbournes, which was obviously very big at the time, and about my dad, because obviously my dad knows them from back in the day too. And that was kind of it, really. And then about 3-4 months later, I got an email from Ozzy's office saying that he was looking for a keyboard player and would I be interested in touring. At the time, I was with a band called Travis, so I couldn't actually do that tour, so I had to turn it down. And then Ozzy had his quad bike accident, and the tour was postponed. This is back in 2003, I think. So when the tour came back to being rescheduled, they asked me again, and I was available, and that was the start, really.
Very cool. And you know, the Scream record, which I thought was just a fantastic record. You were heavily involved in the songwriting on that record. And I wanted to ask you, how does songwriting work with Ozzy? Do you submit ideas like on tape or on files to him and he kind of listens to what he wants? Or do you actually sit down and kind of jam stuff out with him?
Well, I think it works differently for each album because he's very, you know, Ozzy's very good at kind of works with lots of different people. Each album is generally a different producer. It's a different, a different group of musicians sometimes. So I can only really comment on the album that I did, and that was I was called in quite late towards the end of the process. And it was I would sit with Kevin Cherko and Ozzy in the studio, and we would come up with ideas. Either I'd send them back and forward from England, and eventually I came out to America. And it was a case of you sit in the studio and Ozzy comes in and sings some lines, sings some melodies over some riffs, and then once you've got, you know, a bit of a track worked out, he'll go off and write lyrics and come back with more melodies and things. So it's quite the studio at the time was in his house, so it worked really well for him. So he could come and go during each day and not feel that he's sat in there for a 16-hour day, you know, like a lot of the sort of studio sessions. So he was very, I mean, obviously very involved in the writing, and he's very, you know, he knows what he likes. So he's quite quick to say, you know, I don't like that, or that's, I think one of the comments of one of the tracks was, it sounds like fucking Yes. So obviously ditched that idea. But it's good. He was all very, he was great to work with. And that's one of the things I enjoy about not just this gig, but it's kind of you work with lots of different, as a musician, different writers and different artists, and everybody works kind of differently. So it's always interesting.
Cool. And I wanted to mention too, on this recent Sabbath tour, you're doing keys, but I was reading you also do a little guitar behind the scenes. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's kind of this gig's kind of morphed into when I first started doing it, I only played Paranoid on rhythm guitar, and the rest was all on keyboards. And then I think it was back in 2007 when Tony Iommi came to an Aussie show in, I think it was at the Gibson Amphitheatre. and he saw that I was playing more guitar with Ozzy. And that was when Gus G was in. It might have been 2010. I'm getting my years muddled. I'm getting too old. And Tony said, would you be happier when we come to do Sabbath stuff to play a bit more guitar? I said, yeah, I'll play whatever makes it more authentic. For me, it's more about the, you know, on the early Sabbath songs, there weren't keyboards, so it is more authentic. If there's a bit of rhythm guitar going on whilst Tony's soloing, it makes sense. But I'd never really thought to suggest that, you know, but Tony was, you know, more than happy for me to do it. So now I think I only play about three songs on keys. The rest is all rhythm guitar, which is great. You know, I've got the ultimate bedroom guitar player's gig. You know, I'm sort of off stage playing guitar along with those legends.
That's amazing. And obviously you're a brilliant keyboardist, which we hear on all your different projects, which we're going to get into a lot of these other things you're working on. But as far as guitar playing goes, when did you start playing guitar? Was that as a kid too, or?
Well, I was about 20 something. I mean, I've always been interested in guitar and always kind of, you know, noodled about a little bit, but never sort of took it very seriously. I always concentrated more on the piano and keyboard side of things. And when I was about early 20s, I took a gig in the West End of London for a musical. And the guy was saying, oh, it's great. He said, it's kind of Hammond organ and keyboards and da-da-da. And I took the gig and he said, right, it starts in 2 weeks. And he said, oh, you play guitar as well? And I went, yeah. And he was like, right, great, that was it. And the phone went down and he sent me the score of all the music. And it was half acoustic, half electric, kind of on the guitar front, and then kind of keys as well. And I kind of shit myself, really. I thought, so I had to basically get knuckle down and get my act together. But it's a lot easier learning another instrument when you've already got the basis of another one. And that was it, really. So I got myself up to a good enough sort of standard to be able to get through the West End shows. And then after that, it just became a way of getting employed, really, because a lot of, as budgets were cutting down on tours over in England, there were, you know, they rather than have two guitar players and two keyboard players, they'd have a keyboard player that also played guitar. So again, with Annie Lennox, I played mainly keyboards, but, you know, a little bit of acoustic guitar as well, and a few other gigs. Sort of, it just makes it more, it makes you more employable.
Right on. And obviously your dad, just a legendary keyboardist, Rick Wakeman, has played with Yes, of course, and we mentioned Sabbath and a lot of the great Bowie stuff too. He's been a part of. So was he giving you lessons as a boy, or did you kind of just absorb what he was doing? How big of an influence was your father?
Well, he was a huge influence. His involvement was actually quite minimal from a kind of a practical perspective, because my mum and dad separated when I was about three. So I lived with my mum and my stepfather and then went to visit my dad. So it was kind of like, you know, we'd see him at weekends or when he wasn't on tour. And it wasn't a case of sat down at the piano and he'd sort of show me stuff. I remember asking him specifically once when I was about 8 or 9 to show me the intro to one of the Catherine Howard, I think, from The Six Wives of Henry VIII. And he handed me a cassette and said, if you want to learn it, here's the cassette, go and learn it. And at the time, I thought that was the meanest thing any father could do. Looking back on it, it was probably one of the most valuable lessons I've ever had, whether it be intentional or not. You know, it helped me develop my ear from a very young age, and to sit down, and I sat there until this tape, you know, I wore it out, you know, learning the start of this piece. It would have been very easy for him just to show me and then I would have played it and that was it, but it was really a valuable lesson. So from that perspective, he was very influential. And, you know, I still ask him to this day, you know, if I've got a kind of music related question, I'll always value his opinion very highly. If it's a family related question, I tend to ask his advice and then do the opposite, because he's been divorced four times. So he's a good source of information, but not always, you know, I don't always heed it.
Musical information. Yeah, cool. Let's talk about some of the stuff you're doing now. I think fans of Yes, I think fans of Porcupine Tree, for example, would really dig what you do with Headspace. There's a new record out, All That You Fear Is Gone, rather new, I think came out earlier this year. Great stuff. Well, give me a little history on this band, because I really don't know much about Headspace, and I think we have to let the Talking Metal listeners know about this great band.
Okay, well, it all started really back in 2006, where I'd just been on quite a few long tours with Ozzy and stuff, and the other other friends of mine that I never get to see, great musicians, that I just, you know, they become really good friends and you just never get to see them. And I thought, well, it'd be a good opportunity. Normally these things happen at school, you know, school bands, and, you know, friends get together and they form a band. We were just a bit late getting together, really. We were kind of, you know, friends who are all musicians, but we all work with other bands. As I say, I work with Ozzy a lot, so that kind of takes up a lot of my time. But I thought it'd be a good excuse to get a group of guys together who are all friends, all knew each other and all similar minded, all have other projects going on, but have a band where we can really just do our own thing. And when we started it, we really didn't know which way it was going to go. It could have turned into a band like Keane, or it could have been like a, you know, more of a pop thing. We really didn't have any preconceived ideas. I remember the first email I sent to everybody was, you know, we booked a rehearsal room and I just said, don't come with any preconceived ideas or ideas. Let's just come in and see what happens. And that's kind of what happened. And we did a couple of EPs and then managed to get to get on a couple of the support slots with Ozzy in 2007, which was great. And it kind of went from there, really. And then we kind of, you know, we got the deal and did our first album, I Am Anonymous, which was good. And that seemed to go down well. The difficulty always is finding time to do it live, because we're all busy. You know, Lee the bass player's away with ELO at the moment. We have managed to do a couple of festivals in the summer, and next summer we're hoping to put a tour together as well for Europe, which would be good. But we've got like a week's worth of shows in December. And but it's basically, we're all really good mates, and it's an opportunity for us to kind of really do what we want to do rather than be playing for other people.
Now, the shows that you mentioned in December, are those headlining gigs, or are you playing with somebody else?
Yeah, the headlining gigs in Europe, that's all information's on headspaceonline.com. But there's, I think it's four shows, one in Germany, two in Holland, one in Belgium, and then we're looking at maybe doing a London show. We'll see if the time, kind of, if there's enough time to do it.
Excellent. Another thing you're doing, I'm a big Whitesnake fan, Neil Murray, who played on all that classic Whitesnake stuff through the big self-titled album in 1987. You have a band with him, Snake Charmer, and you guys had a record that came out back in 2013. Is there plans for another Snake Charmer record?
Yeah, we're about halfway through it at the moment. We're using a great studio in England with a producer called Gary Stevenson, who produced all the ABC stuff and Go West and a lot of the kind of 80s bands. I've known him quite a while, and even though he's kind of more known for his 80s productions, he's a fantastic producer, and I just thought he'd be a perfect fit. So I got all the guys together. We went up, checked his studio out. And they loved it, and it's a lovely environment out in the countryside. So we've got a new guitar player now, Simon McBride, who replaced Mickey Moody, who was on the first album. Right. So we're kind of, again, it's a similar thing to Headspace. It's kind of trying to fit in the time to get it all done. But the good thing is those guys aren't quite as, you know, they don't do so many other projects, so they're available a bit more. So they're kind of getting on with things at the moment. I did Hammond on six tracks literally the day before I came away on this next run of the Sabbath dates. So so they're kind of cracking on with the next kind of six or so tracks, and yeah, it's good. It's sounding great. It's going to be good. You know, I like to think it's what Whitesnake would have been if it carried on as it was, if you know what I mean. The kind of the old, you know, there's obviously a place for Whitesnake now. David Coverdale, it's kind of that the way he took it forward, that was the way that it you know went to it had to be. But I think of this band as kind of just carrying on from back in the 70s. It's very raw. It's very kind of, you know, twin guitar.
It started off a lot more bluesy and, you know, not so metal, if you will, right?
Exactly. And I think, you know, the way that it changed was just moving with the times, which was absolutely right. You know, I was a huge Whitesnake fan when I was a kid. So, I love both kind of eras of it. But I think, you know, I think there's place for both. And it's such a laugh to play. You know, it gave me an excuse to buy a Hammond organ, so...
And being that Neil was such a part of all that classic Whitesnake, when you see Snake Charmer live, I'm guessing you'll get a lot of those Whitesnake classics, correct?
Yeah, we don't. Well, I mean, we haven't been over here to America, unfortunately. We've been trying to sort of get that together for a while, but we tend to play in Europe quite a lot, festivals and things. And it's, yeah, now we've got, once the second album's finished, we'll have a lot more material. But up until now, it's been, we'll probably do three or four Whitesnake songs and then the rest of the songs from the Snake Charmer album.
Excellent. Cool. I wanted to mention the stuff you do solo, or actually it's not solo, with Damon Wilson from Headspace. Now you guys have done some stuff outside of Headspace, which has a mellower feel. You want to talk a little bit about the stuff you do with Damon outside of Headspace?
Yeah, I mean, that came about really because I mean, he's a really good friend of mine. I've known him a long time. We had a band together back in 95, I think it was, 94, 95. So I've known him a long time. And I get on really well with him. And he came up to my house. I just said, well, let's just write some songs and see, you know, stuff that wouldn't fit with Headspace, you know, and wouldn't fit with his kind of solo thing. So we locked ourselves in my front room for a couple of days, literally, just sat at a piano. He had an acoustic guitar, I had an acoustic guitar, and we came up with ideas. He sang melodies, and we got about 20 ideas together. He went home, and then a couple of weeks later, we kind of decided on which ones were kind of the strongest ones to focus on. And that was it. He came up again, and then I think he probably came back three or four times, and we finished the writing together. And then we went in the studio and recorded it. It was really quite a simple process, and it was it just felt very natural, and it was great. And we're actually doing a tour in February in the UK. Oh, cool. Just the two of us, probably do about 15-20 shows around the UK once the Sabbath thing finishes.
And we'll just you two guys on stage, no one else.
Yep. The only thing we need is a real piano. I'm quite fussy about that, just because it is such a kind of a. It's such a, you know, a minimal kind of sounding album, and the two of us together, it's kind of, I wanted it to sound kind of, you know, just a bit classier, really. So if it's a real piano, a couple of acoustic guitars, and we sit there and we chat and we play songs, and we also do some songs from, you know, from our kind of past thing. So he'll do a few of his solo tracks or whatever, and I'll play a couple of pieces that I wrote with albums with my dad and things. So it's kind of, it's like an evening with kind of vibe.
Gotcha. Very good. I wanted to mention the whole connection here, how I got to meet up with you today, comes through somebody named Callahan, who you do some gigs with, and a great singer-songwriter. can you talk a little bit about her and your connection to her?
Yeah, well, I met her a long time back now when she moved to London, when she was about, she must have been about 17 or something. And she was with a manager, I think it was called Oliver Smallman, I think was her manager at the time. And myself and a guy called Giles Palmer were doing a lot of writing together with different artists in London. And he just hooked us up with her, and we got on really well. She left that management company, but we continued to write with her. Then she moved over to Nashville. Personally, at the time I was writing with her, I always felt she was more country than pop, but her management were trying to push her like a kind of Alanis Morissette, Natalie Imbruglia, that kind of thing, where she was always, in my eyes, way more kind of country pop. And that kind of really came out when she moved over to Nashville and sort of, you know, started working with Sean Mullins and people like that. But we've always kept in touch, and I, every now and again, I get a writing gig for somebody, and it needs a female kind of top line, so we work on stuff together. And a couple of tracks turned out really well. In fact, One Parachute ended up on her last album.
Oh, cool.
That was originally, we wrote that for Celine Dion, and it didn't get taken up by her, but she, you know, it turned out in a really nice track, so she ended up using it.
Cool, yeah, great voice, and got to see her live recently, and excellent performer. So February 4th will be the last show ever, at least that's what we're told with Black Sabbath. Obviously, I'm guessing it's going to be a pretty emotional night for Ozzy, Tony, and Geezer. What about you as part of the team? How are you going to feel about this last show? Heavy emotions?
Well, it is going to be quite weird. I haven't really thought too much about it, but you know, you say as you're told it's the last show. That's all I'm told as well. As far as I'm aware, that is, you know, it's every time people ask these questions, I hear them say, you know, that this really is it. This is, you know, so as far as Sabbath, you know, goes, this is definitely, it's going to be emotional. And I think there's a lot of pressure on Birmingham shows anyway. When we've played at the it's the same kind of thing. It's kind of New York, Los Angeles, London, Birmingham are the four shows where there's always just an added expectation. And I think, you know, they put it on themselves, obviously, you know, they want to make it a memorable a memorable night, and you know how you prepare for your final show. I've no idea. I mean, I don't know how they're going to deal with that at all. But you know, they've never disappointed before, so I think it'd be pretty mega. I think.
Yeah, I wish I could be there, but it sounds like it's going to be one hell of a night. As is tonight. Again, the last time I think I will probably see Black Sabbath tonight in New Jersey. Psyched to see the show. It's been great talking with you. Again, catch Black Sabbath, guys, on this last string of dates. Your last chance to see Black Sabbath. Adam is a part of the team, doing a lot of guitar and keyboards, more guitar than keyboards, it sounds like, on this tour. And also, check out Adam's band Headspace, a great new record out, All That You Fear Is Gone. Again, personally, I think if you're a fan of Porcupine Tree or Yes, you're going to dig this record. So thanks again, Adam.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
Thank you. Supremacy. Give us what we can't get on our own. Give us entertainment to keep us calm. Give us reassurance that we're sane.
Debate that can't be held. In the moment.
So that was Road to Supremacy off of the album All That You Fear Is Gone, which is the new record by Headspace.
Yeah, which is Adam's band. And that's a heavy song. That's the first song off the record. And I love that heavy guitar that kicks in there. It's great stuff. Some of the album leans a little more progressive, but you have elements of metal guitar on it. Some just amazing keyboard and piano playing by Adam. Some great vocals. It's a great, great band. If you don't know Headspace, definitely do yourself a favor and check them out. Another cool thing that happened, all thanks to Adam, while we were there, is Emily and I got to go backstage, and we didn't get to hang out with Ozzy or anything. I imagine they have a pretty strong firewall around Ozzy, Tony, and Geezer, but Adam did take us backstage and show us his rig and all the amps. He's playing Laney's just like Tony does, backstage. And then he took us downstairs to a dressing room, and there was Tommy Clufetis. So we got to hang out with Tommy. Emily got to ask Tommy about his pants. And what were you asking him about?
Oh my God. I mean, he has the best clothes. And I remember thinking that at Madison Square Garden, not to sound too girly, but I like things that lace up. And he had these like 1970s style, like low rise bell bottoms that laced up the front. So we had like an extensive conversation about where he gets his clothes and what he did with those pants. And yeah, it was pretty awesome.
It was great. And we're going to post a picture of Emily, myself, and Tommy in today's show notes. And I strongly encourage you to connect with Adam Wakeman on social media and through his website. Again, a lot of great stuff Adam is doing, not only with Black Sabbath, but with Ozzy Osbourne, with Headspace, with Snake Charmer, which is kind of, in a way, an offshoot of Whitesnake. Neil Murray, who played on all the classic Whitesnake stuff, is the guy who kind of, I don't know if I call him the leader, but he's the guy in Snake Charmer with Adam. And they even play Whitesnake songs live when they go out, so... There you go. Snake Charmer, Headspace, Ozzy Osbourne, Black Sabbath. Adam Wakeman is the man. Thanks, Adam, for doing the interview with me in New York City, and thanks for putting on a great show that night at PNC Arts Center in New Jersey. We had just an awesome time. Guys, to support the podcast, you can go to talkingmetal.com. You can check out the photo of Emily and I backstage at Black Sabbath with Tommy Clufetis. You can check out a photo of Adam and I in New York City the day of the show. And what else? You can use our Amazon links. There's a PayPal donation tab, which you can use. And you can also like our Facebook page. I used to have two Facebook pages, Emily, and I've for years been trying to combine the two, because I had Talking Metal Digital and Talking Metal, and Facebook, they would never let me do it, and I hadn't tried in like a year, and then just randomly I tried the other day, and they were like, you've been accepted, both pages are combined, so that was cool.
That's awesome. I didn't even know you had a Facebook page.
You have not liked the Talking Metal Facebook page?
No, I'm sure I have. I'm not a big Facebook person. I mean, I am. I'm on there. I was on there today.
Cool. Well, where is the best place people can connect with you on social media?
I'm on Facebook. I'm also on Twitter at Emily Striegel. It's very easy, right? Because Striegel is an extremely rare name. That's why it's like everything. I've never had a problem getting a username with that name. I my maiden name is Green, everyone. So I went from Emily Green to Emily Striegel. It's been quite painful.
Thanks a lot. Cool. Let's close with a little sound sample of Black Sabbath. Again, Emily's been lucky enough to see this final tour twice. I only got to see it once so far. Who knows if we'll end up over on the grounds where it all started for the February 4th show in Birmingham. Probably not, but I still am holding out hope that maybe somehow that could happen. They're also playing February 2nd, so their two final shows will be over there. And as Jack Osbourne said, you know, in the interview I did with him recently, it's probably going to be a pretty emotional night. It's almost like a living wake, Jack, compared it to. You know?
And I'm sure February in Birmingham is going to be gorgeous.
Yeah. How cold does it get over there, I wonder?
I think it gets pretty cold and it's pretty gloomy. Yeah. I mean, listen to Black Sabbath.
Right.
Exactly. And on that note, I usually like to play more off the beating path tunes, but let's just go way back and do the typical thing. Play the song Black Sabbath by Black Sabbath to take us out here today. Go buy the full version of it on iTunes. And again, thanks for listening to Talking Metal. All right, take care, guys. We'll be right back.